The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission in your mind. He is Michael Coleman, CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. We do this show. This started out as obviously a helper of a non-for-profit. So we took a lot of questions and emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. We continue to take those. We got a couple of really interesting ones we'll get into on this edition here of Mission Minded. And then we have another show that's specific to the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, which I really wanted to get into because we talk about, listen, It's all about being sexy, baby. It's all about wanting people to listen to your podcast, and we've got a ton of listeners, and so we want to keep it fresh and keep people wanting to come back. And obviously, the business you're in, there's only so many things you could talk about. So
That's right.
And I know you deal with that every single day. So got a couple of emails. First of all, you doing okay? You sound much better.
I'm doing great.
I mean, you've been down, and the flu's been going around. It's been nasty, but so glad you were never off your feet. And I know that you're putting your best foot forward. So got a couple of interesting emails. I did want to throw something out that I thought was interesting. I don't know if you want to go off on this at all, but we're always trying to figure out where to make money. Maryland legislator yesterday. Threw out the idea of taxing sugar drinks in the state of Maryland, and she believes that they can raise $500 million a year by putting this tax on sugar drinks, and then they would put that money back into schools to pay for a certain number of kids so they wouldn't have to pay for their lunches. Sounds like a brilliant idea. Obviously, the Coca-Colas and the 7-Ups and the Pepsis of the world hate it. And she really made a really fine Arby, she really went after. She's like, she put a cake on one side and then a can of soda here, and she said these are equal. I mean, it was crazy when she presented it that way. We're always looking for different ways to raise a tax money, but do you have any thoughts on that? I know, you know, we have a sin tax here in the great state of Alabama on liquor and everything else, all the good stuff that us sinners love to imbibe in. We get taxed for it because cigarettes, you know, whatever's not good for us actually cost a little bit more, and I'm sure marijuana is going to be right behind that. Recreational or medicinal. But you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, like you said, there's some low hanging fruit of things that people don't typically get too upset about. I mean, there's some people, and I understand it, where they just feel like that the government is the money that comes into the government's their money and they're the wise ones. And so they feel like, hey, we want to take more money. I get less frustrated with new tax ideas because, look, I get it. We went through the city of Montgomery just added 3 cents to the gasoline tax, and it's going to raise, you wouldn't think, oh, that's not is that big of a deal. Well, it's going to raise, you know, a few million dollars to be able to pave our streets and things like that. And I get it. The bottom line is sometimes you got to have revenue, and you're looking for sometimes, you're trying to make it relative. So like, gasoline tax to pay for roads that links together. That makes sense. Everybody uses the roads. Everybody wants nicely paved roads. So yeah, that kind of makes sense. And I understand the government's got to have revenue to pay because we're not like the federal government who can just continue to borrow and stay in a debt. I actually prefer this method. If you're going to raise money, I like it to kind of be on things that are more choice oriented. So for instance, I've noticed that so everybody can make a choice. Hey, I don't want to pay the tax. Yeah. Well, I just won't drink sugary drinks. Mm-hmm. I've gone through now sometimes, you know, and of course they have the things right by the registers for people with deep impulses, just like myself. I am a sucker. There's a sucker born every day. I have been reincarnated day after day after day. I stand through there because I'm telling you, I will reach over and grab, if I want a Coke, in this case, a Diet Coke, because you know, I'm always watching my girlish figure.
Sure.
And so I reach over and grab a Coke and I notice it's $2.20 for a 20-ounce bottle. $2.20.
You could go one aisle. You go one aisle and buy a case for about the same thing, you know. And they give you one free. I saw bringing that point up. So yeah, they get you right there where it costs you extra there for sure.
Yeah, and so that. So I asked myself in that case, okay, I'm stupid enough to pay $220 because we are in a, I want it and I want it now. And here's a cold one I can just carry with me. So $220. So I asked myself, well, if it was $230, if they added a dime tax, I don't know how much tax she was proposing for that, but let's say they added a dime tax to that bottle. Would it prevent me from doing it?
No,
probably not. So, and then the people who said, I don't want to pay the tax, it's not enforced upon people like a gasoline tax is. It's kind of more ubiquitous that everybody has to use gasoline or is affected by that. So I get it. I mean, there's, of course, we've already been taxing cigarettes to death and on and on and on. So usually you get less pushback on things where it's so-called evil, because they say, well, if you don't raise enough money, that means people are using sugary drinks less, which has a positive impact on health. So you kind of win either way.
Yeah.
You know,
children and we're all children, right? We're children, we're God's children, but children love to be disciplined. I always hear that kids love to be disciplined. Don't be afraid to give tough love because kids crave discipline. I believe that to be true. It's much easier to be harsh on your children when they really need to be disciplined. When you tell yourself that, because they are looking for direction and they're looking towards Mama Bird. I've just gained 20 pounds the last month and a half. And it's Girl Scout cookies. I've had a sweet tooth that's come out of nowhere. I don't know what in the hell is going on, but every single night I'm eating a huge bowl of ice cream. I am so undisciplined right now and it's driving me crazy. So I'm skipping dinners so I can eat my ice cream. So I'm trying to figure out a way I won't eat lunch, you know, and I had five sleeves of Thin Mints last night. We're weak. We're weak. Yes. We are weak. And sometimes I think, And parents are weak. I need an hour. So go play on the computer. I don't care what you look at. Go
Google, play in the street.
Go play in the street. Yeah, just get out of here. Yeah. You'll be fine. It's dark and just take a flashlight with you. You'll be okay. I get that. And so sometimes when someone puts the hammer down and says, listen, I'm going to start charging you $5 for a can of Coke and it's going to make a difference. Sometimes I'm like, thank you. Because it, you know, depending on how much it is, it will change your mind on how much you spend on it. So I thought that was really interesting. Interesting question here from Bruce down in your neck of the woods in Montgomery. He said, I listened to your most recent show on DEI, which was really good. We talked about the DEI and how, and it's funny because everybody's going back to the old way, even if they don't have to. I know the government's saying, listen, if you don't, then you're going to be, you know, we're going to come back at you and blah, 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 which I think is kind of strange. I feel more comfortable if they just said, listen, you don't have to enforce this. You do what you want at the state level, but you don't have to enforce it. But they are coming at you if in fact you don't enforce it. But Bruce wanted to know in Montgomery, will going backwards in this particular case affect women's rights in any way? This is, and I thought, what does he mean? This is something about giving everyone an equal shot, an equal chance. And women have been number two forever, and they probably will be number two forever. That's just the way it is. It's a man's world. James Brown sang a song about it. And as hard as we work to make sure that women are making the exact same amount of money that men are making and everything else, women's rights and women's votes. And hell, they just started being able to vote within the last 50 or 60 years, for gosh sakes. We've been around for 200. So now that we're saying, listen, whether you're Latino, African-American or whatever, all of a sudden you're not going to have these extra things. Will it play out at all in women's rights at all, do you believe?
Well, let me go back to the premise of his question, because it sounds like that what he may feel or may suspect is that the rolling back of some of these DEI initiatives means that we're rolling back rights and access to minorities or people of color.
Yes.
And so let me push back on that. When I say push back, let me just clarify my position and my thoughts on that. I think right now, if I stood up in front of, let's say you had a group of African-Americans and you had a group of Hispanics and you had a group of Asians and whatever, and a group of white. And my question to them would be something along the lines of, can you name anything right now that I am able to do that you're not able to do? Do I have access to anything that you don't have access to? And I would still challenge that. So So when we roll it back, that's kind of where we're rolling it back to, that nobody's going to be elevated, because what DEI did, and again, I understand the sensitivity of the issue and the focus on this, but what DEI was doing was inadvertently segregating and causing division and elevating one group over another, which by its definition is racism.
Yeah.
And what the argument has been, at least from some outlets, is, well, we've been so far behind because we're a minority that you need to now elevate us and put us ahead.
Fair enough.
But the problem is you're still, you're right back to the idea of racism, which is elevating one race or prioritizing one race over another. So regardless of which race is that, it, as a principle and as a concept, it's wrong. So what I would say is, before I even get into that, is I think what the goal is and what DEI is, it's, you know, sometimes it's good to see the pendulum swing to another extreme, because if it's over here, if you think it's too far on this side and then you see it swing to the opposite, you see the ill effects of that. I don't know if I mentioned this when we talk about it, but I remember seeing videos of white people in colleges getting yelled at saying, get out of here. This is an area that is designated for people of color. Mm-hmm. And so they were barking and yelling and screaming and berating and being rude and saying, you're not welcome here. And that flies in the face of the name diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because inclusion's about everybody should be welcome at each place.
Yep.
So instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater because there may be some abuses, what we need to do is continue to highlight inequities that we see. But lots of times when there's no inequities, then you get into the what's described as the micro inequities. Or it's I'm drawing a blank, but yep. Where it's almost like it's not explicit, it's implicit. And so then you start analyzing language, and then you start saying things like, well, when you say this, here's what it represents to me. And so I'm going to prohibit you from saying that. And so we shut down free speech. Right now, you know, in Germany, you can actually be arrested for saying something unkind or something that about somebody on social media. Mm-hmm. And they're for that. They're for the shutting down of, as a whole. And so now this, what's labeled as far right, and I'm sure they are, they're probably ultra conservative in some of their views, but this far right saying, no, it shouldn't be that way. So now you're talking about free speech now has become a far right issue in Germany. So, you know, in America, there's the pendulum swung so far, it couldn't go to any further extreme. And then finally it swung back. Now, again, I like the idea of being sensitive to the idea that as a white male, it is possible. So I'm going to say a white middle-class male. So it is, if you're not paying attention, if you don't build this into your culture, it can be easy to want to build your organization with people who look, think, and feel exactly like you do.
Yeah.
It's not because you are inherently racist, like you want to work against racists or oppress them or keep them down or anything. It's just human nature. Black culture is no different. When you see black culture, people in black culture, they surround themselves with other people who like the same music, who talk the same lingo, like the same, you know. So there's nothing inherently wrong with when you is fitting in your community, whatever your community is. But the idea is, if white people, which they have for a long time, have built America, they've kind of built it from the perspective of a white male perspective. And so sometimes that can't. So if you look at that as a group, some people who are over here, a black male, Hispanic male, whatever, may not fit in naturally or as easily. it's not necessarily that white people are trying to keep them out. It's that it's just a different perspective. So again, you go back to the baseline of DEI. I think it's important that we look around and say, are we excluding people who are otherwise qualified to that can add and help grow our world, our business, our community, our churches, all that kind of stuff. And we need to make sure we're fighting against that. Now, take all that to the women.
And let me back up just a second here before you move on. You keep talking about this enforced behavior. Forced behavior doesn't work. And I think about the Rooney Rule in the National Football League. Remember they had that thing where you had to talk to at least a percentage of African American coaches before you made a hire.
Had to be interviewed. Right.
It didn't work. I mean, you know, but you had to talk to one token person. You know, call it what it is.
Yeah.
You had to talk. You had to have a discussion with one black person to say, okay, well, Ryan's, we were going to hire him anyway. And they were actually meeting with African American coaches after they had already made the hire, just so they could stick to that rule, or else they were going to take away a draft pick or something like that. And whenever you talk about a forced behavior, whether your intention is right or not, it doesn't seem to work. And I know this is a bad analogy, but I think about seatbelts. I remember when we had to start wearing seatbelts, I thought, this is ridiculous. Why in the hell in the helmets? Why do I have to wear a helmet when I'm riding a bicycle? It's my life. I want to ride a bicycle. I want to feel the wind through my hair. Why should I have to wear a seatbelt? Now, the seatbelt is different because it affects all of us. It affects our lives. It affects our insurance companies. It affects your life, my life. But now it's like I couldn't even tell you when we enforced seatbelts, but now it's just a second thing. The biggest scumbags in the world use their seatbelt. Even people who don't care use their seatbelt. So it worked. It was an enforced situation, but it took years. So when we're trying to, if we have a group of white people and a group of black people and we invite them into one room, all the black people are going to go on one side, all the white people are going to go on the other side. You know why? Because they have something in common with each other. Their culture, they're the same. You may have a little bit of mixture. But if you put half of the whites with the blacks and half the blacks with the whites and say, now get along and force them, it doesn't work that way all the time. And so, you know, that's what DEI felt like to me. And I think that's what it felt like to a lot of people, that I think the intention was good, but then, of course, it was taken advantage of. And there's no doubt that, you know, blacks have had it much more difficult in the United States than whites have. We know that. I mean, it's true. And so I get that. But continue your case now. We're talking about women because you can make an argument they're not that far behind.
Well, you start looking over, like, it's really interesting if you get in, because people talk about it, and it's a big joke. You see comedians talk about it, you know, that there's this idea that women don't make as much per hour for the same job. And on the surface, that may be, you say, well, that makes sense, you know, maybe. But when you dig down into the data, what you find is that that's really not a true case. And I really, off the top of my head, am not really prepared to defend that wholeheartedly, but I will give you a couple of things that points to that. Statistics show that women don't put in as many hours. When you're on salary and you don't get paid overtime, data proves that men work longer hours. Okay, so if you include the longer hours, and if you include things that women, for instance, when they have childbirth and they're out for a certain amount of time, their jobs are protected.
Yep.
And so there, when you get into all of those, there's a whole litany of additional factors that when it plays itself out, you see that there's really not a pay gap that appears it if you just look at raw data, if you just look at the right, but when you dig into the data and see all the factors that it lays out, it's, you can't make that same argument. And especially, I mean, DEI and the women's movement, look, again, I'm all for fairness, but I'm not for punishment of perceived misdoings of the past or whatever. And that's where DEI in some areas went to, which is, now we're going to dominate the white culture. And so we're going to enforce this, and that you have to think this. It's not enough to just, another example would be the transgender movement.
Mm.
So And that was part of DEI. So it wasn't enough to say, like, for instance, hockey players. So there were some hockey players. They were celebrating LGBTQ1IA+, whatever it is. And there were a couple of people. And so they sewed the flag, the gay flag on the, you know, and they refused to wear it because it conflicted with their religious liberties.
Yeah.
So they get suspended, or they get fined, or they get whatever, because it's not enough that you just, like, I'm not doing anything to hurt transgender people. I'm a live and let live. I mean, this is their response. If you want to be transgender, go be transgender. I'm not trying to stop you, but don't force me to do this. So I just saw a really interesting experiment online. So a guy went to a college campus and he interviews, it was in Wisconsin. And so he interviewed about five people and he asked every one of them if a Muslim was asked to come and pray in Jesus' name, or come to a function and ask to pray in Jesus' name, should he be forced to? And everybody said, no, that should be his right. Mm-hmm. And then they said, well, what if, and they came up with another example. If a woman, and I forgot what it was, but anyway, the same thing. And then every one of them, when it came to, well, what if a baker is asked to do a gay wedding, which really happened, you know, in Colorado. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was an apples to apples comparison. And every one of them on the other two said, no, you shouldn't compel them. But when they got to the third, every one of them, they went to answer and stopped themselves because they saw the contradiction, because they were very quick. So again, when you take your own personal view, you can see very clearly that's not right to force people to go against their beliefs. But when it's against Christians, or when it's against white culture, or perceived white culture, or white oppressive culture, or whatever, that's where DEI and that force, and then everybody just goes along with it and doesn't push back. That's what we did during COVID.
Yeah.
That's why the pendulum swung so far. So anyway, that was a long explanation into talking about. And I don't want people to leave here to think that I'm all about equity, diversity, and inclusion, but I'm a big diversity of thought. I surround myself with people who think differently than me. I couldn't care less about their race, or because I can have a room full of white men who all think differently than me. Mm-hmm. That's diversity of thought.
Yeah.
But if I have a room full of one of every race, and one of every gender, there's only two, but they all think alike, mm-hmm. but they all think the same thing. That's not diversity.
Yeah.
Cause you're getting the same thing. So sorry for the ranting, and sorry for the long explanation, but, I do not think there's going to be a peeling back of women's rights. I think we'll get more balance for a while, and the pendulum may swing again.
Yeah.
And it does this back and forth. We never get to a point and we just keep it here.
You're watching Mission Mind. Keep in mind your mission, your mind. He's Michael Coleman, the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. They cover 35 wonderful counties in the great state of Alabama, helping feeding America. They do wonderful work down there. One final thing I wanted to get into, and we just have a couple minutes here. A grassroots movement's call for Americans not to shop at major chains for 24 hours. It's called an economic blackout. Went viral last week and is supposed to start tomorrow. Organizers launching a week-long boycott against Amazon that starts tomorrow, or actually today. Today's Friday. John Schwartz, the 57-year-old founder of the People's Union USA, is calling on Americans to boycott Amazon and its companies, including Zappos, Ring, Whole Foods, Twitch, and Prime Video for 1 week. The Amazon boycott is about sending a message loud enough to shake up the system and rattle the company. Amazon is one of the biggest, wealthiest, most powerful corporations in the world. It crushes small businesses. It exploits its workers. It fights against unions while raking in billions. It could make a positive difference in the world, but it chooses not to. What's your thoughts?
Things like that are make people feel good. It makes them feel.
And then they'll go shopping on Amazon an hour later.
Well, it's one of those. It's kind of virtue signaling. Like, I'm boycotting today. Well, the problem is you're not going to be boycotting in a week. In other words, you're going to go back because, again, Amazon and Amazon ordering and all that so ubiquitous across our whole nation. Then, you know, so what kind of message? Let's say it was effective. And let's say you reduce their spending in one day by 25%. So everybody goes, yep, I'm not going to do it on Friday. And so Amazon goes, yep, I see. You know, that had an impact on that day. But guess what? Tomorrow it's going to go right back to where it was.
Yeah.
So how do you think you're going to change the culture by implementing something like that? So it's a lot of things that make people feel good that they have some control. Like they see Amazon as a great evil. And because of that great evil, this is them sticking a sword in the side of great evil. We're sticking it to the man. I'm going to feel good about it. Screw those people. And ultimately, it's going to have zero impact across the board. And the thing about it is, Amazon knows. Amazon's not
out
there
fighting against
this.
It may have a reverse effect on it. Now, the people were doing this against Walmart 20 years ago, remember? When Walmart started making their big boxes and it was killing the mom and pop stores, we were like these big boys. And what do? We'd like, yeah, I'm not going to shop there. I'm going to help mom and pop until mom and pop started selling, you know, a can of pop for $2.50 when I could go to Walmart and get it for 35 cents. And I'm like, listen, eventually, you know, you start bypassing their store and to walk a little extra longer to go to, because it's cheaper and we're looking for a better deal.
And here's the other thing. Mom and pop can't provide all the jobs in a community that Walmart is and paying benefits and assisting to college. Look, I've been a small business owner. I totally get it, but I'm not mad at Walmart because they can deliver things more conveniently, cheaper and everything else. And I get the messaging and I'm more sympathetic. I could not be to mom and pop shops and people trying to make it. But the reality is our economy is driven by these things. They employ, just think about this. It's not just that they employ people in Amazon and all that world, but think about the UPS drivers and the Amazon drivers, all the additional jobs that it affects. So it's so intermixed. I mean, like I said, it's just part of who we are now. It'd be the same thing as like, let's stay off Facebook for a day. Or let's don't buy anything on Facebook. I mean, it's you just can't flush it out of our economy. And that's how the world has gone because people speak with their dollars. And the reality is, and I'll be honest with you. I am so guilty of this is I am a slave to convenience.
I know.
And right now I already have lunch because when I get off this thing, I'm going home and I already have lunch delivered. And I guarantee you, I had to pay the delivery fee and a tip for the driver, which was ridiculous.
Yep.
But now I don't have to go an extra 2 miles out of my way and the hassle of going in and picking it up.
You know, and again, I mean, I appreciate what they're trying to do. And if they were doing something, setting up something to see how they had a reaction, maybe they are, maybe they're setting up to see a reaction and go, okay, we made a reaction. Now let's target what we really want to go after. If there's something bigger down the road, I'm all about immediate impacts. And this is totally, but you just said the word flush. And I heard some show this morning, they were talking about the water issues again with Lake Mead and the whole thing. And I'm like, I don't get it because there's some type of atmospheric river right now where they got more water they know what to do with. And then of course we're going to have wildfires because it's so damn dry and everything else. And because they have no water. And I was thinking to myself, what if you had like no flush Thursdays? Now go with me on this.
Yeah. Okay.
One Thursday a month, like the first Thursday of every month, the governor says there's no flush Thursdays. That means you cannot flush a toilet, not wash your hands or anything else. Just flushing toilets one day a month. And it would solve the water problem. I mean, I pee 3 or 4 times before I flush my toilet. It's 5 gallons of water going down the drain. I don't know. My water bill used to be like 12 cents a month, and now it's like 120. I don't know what the Burman Waterworks are screwing us over big time. Every time I turn around, I'm late on my water bill, and I'm like, I just paid the water bill. And it's like hundreds a month, and I'm looking around for leaks and drains. But, I mean, if you just didn't flush the toilet once a month, just throw out an idea in case someone's listening out there. No flush Thursdays or no flush Fridays. One day where you don't flush a toilet, we would probably save somewhere around 65 gallons of water per person. It'd be enough to fill everything up. We'd be good to go. Just saying. There you go. That's how I'm going to change the world, my friend.
No flush Thursdays.
No flush Thursdays.
Well, I'm glad you're not calling me to do that right away.
And some people would bitch about it. Some people would complain about it. Well, I want to flush my toilet. I mean, I can't go poop. I'm like, no. And we'd probably make us drink less and eat less. We'd probably save money there, too. And we could give it to Heart of Alabama Food Bank. See how it all works together?
Yeah, I say, but I'm already a slave to convenience, so I have to say, you just have to bill me, brother.
Yeah, well, you know, Dolly Parton just lost her husband, and when she first started having to pee and poop, she did it outside. Look what she turned into. She had 13 family members, and she peed and pooped outside. They didn't have running water. They had running water, and she didn't have any running water or any electricity. And she comes out with Jolene, and now she's 80 years old, and she lost her husband, and she's the most famous woman in the world.
Let's just say, as my father used to say, she had a lot of charisma helping her.
She had a couple of charisma helps for sure. This is Mission Minded.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.